Marley. You listen to WRCT Pittsburgh. No? Go Steelers.
Donald Trump is suddenly scaring many people. He said on the Clay and Buck show, I know, that he will consider potentially Tucker Carlson for his vice presidential running mate. That's not even necessarily the craziest thing Trump said during the interview. Take a listen to this.
Would you consider Tucker Carlson on your VP list?
Oh,
I
want to
give you a hypothetical here. You're a big sports fan. You know, like, Nick Saban's going to retire at some point. And right. If you talk to the athletic director at Alabama, he would say he has a list. So would Tucker Carlson be on your list of potential VPs? And how many names might be on that list as you sit and look and survey the political field?
Well, first of all, you know, I did my first, you could call it counter-programming, but I won't call it that. But Tucker wanted to do an interview during the first debate. And I think you know, because this is what your business is, we broke every record.
Monster audience.
In history. Yeah. I think it just hit over 300 million people.
Now, remember, that is obviously untrue. And we've talked about how Twitter has juiced their system of tracking to make it so Trump can say that. But of course, it's not true that 300 million people watched his debate with Tucker Carlson. It's patently absurd.
But it was for that evening over 207 million. It then got to 275 within a day or two. And the biggest ever was Oprah's interview with Michael Jackson, which was 125 million.
Right.
So we almost doubled it. Now, who would have thought that was going to happen? The debate, the last debate they had, had the lowest audience in the history of presidential debates.
That's true.
I don't know if you know it. And I think the one tonight is not, it's on tonight, and
yeah.
I don't even talk about it.
Would you consider Tucker, though, that they based on the
I numbers? Like Tucker a lot. I guess I would. I think I'd say I would, because he's got great common sense. You know, when they say that you guys are conservative or I'm conservative, it's not that we're conservative. We have common sense. We want to have safe borders. We want to have a wall because walls work. You know what, Ron, I used to say about walls? I'd say wheels and walls. Everything changes.
All right. So then Trump goes off and ranting into other things. But he says he would consider Tucker Carlson. Now, what's fascinating about this is that Tucker Carlson was revealed to have said horrible things about Donald Trump. He referred to Trump as a demonic force. He said he despised him passionately. And now I guess everyone pretends like that didn't happen. And Tucker's interviewing Trump and they're doing the whole dog and pony show of normalization and everything else that we saw. It's very strange, but also it's extraordinarily horrifying that Trump says, yeah, I would consider Tucker Carlson for VP. Now, Trump was also asked about his indictments, and it's actually sort of interesting what he says. Let me play this for you.
I was always of the opinion that a thing like this couldn't happen. In other words, you protect your former presidents. It's, it's terrible thing to go after a former president, other than if you're in a banana republic.
And a possible future
thing.
President as well.
And
which
a possible,
to,
yeah, it's possible.
Do you think they would put you in jail, and do you think that would benefit you?
I don't know.
I don't want to
say. Yeah, I don't want to say about benefit because I don't want to predict that. But would they, if they could? I think they would do it. Yeah, I think it's not beyond them. I think these are very deranged and angry people.
So Trump says, you're supposed to protect your former presidents. You're supposed to protect the former presidents, not go after them. Trump is saying he should be immune from consequences if he does illegal things. That's what he's saying. He's not arguing the facts. He's simply saying, I thought you protected your former presidents. He wants carte blanche. He wants license to commit crimes, to shoot the proverbial or real person on Fifth Avenue, as he has said before, and to have no consequences. The entire point of establishing and upholding a rule of law is to apply it to everyone. That includes your former president. That's why I don't even like this term banana republic, but making it so everyone is accountable makes us not a so-called banana republic. But for Trump, it's a bad sign that sometimes people might be held accountable for the things that they're doing. As if we needed any more authoritarian dystopia, here's Trump saying if he's reelected, he will absolutely pardon a bunch of the January 6th Trump rioters and insurrectionists.
Will there be a lot of pardons and commutations of people that you think were treated unfairly, J6 defendants, January 6th defendants under your administration?
Yes, absolutely. They were treated horribly. And it's very interesting when I see that very expensive fence that I built in front of the White House. You know, we built that. We rebuilt it. It's made of titanium. And it's really, when I see that being damaged by these people, that's the White House.
Mostly
you have the Capitol.
Protesters.
Let's see what happens to those peaceful protesters about the damage that they're doing to the White House and areas around the White House, because we have people put in jail for 5, 6, 7 years.
So again, it's not just now that Trump thinks he should be immune from consequences, saying we're not supposed to go after, you're supposed to protect your former presidents. He's also saying he's going to let out a bunch of the rioters scot-free. So understand the picture that is being built of Trump's second term if he were to get one. He is going to weaponize the Justice Department to go after his political enemies and demand prosecutions and indictments. He said it openly a bunch of times at this point. He is going to pardon, commute sentences of, etc., individuals who have been convicted for their role in the January 6th riots. He is going to look at taking certain media outlets that he doesn't like off of the air. And I could go on and on and on. It's all an authoritarian nightmare. And I know I've said it before. I know it's starting to get repetitive. Just believe that he's going to try to do these things. We don't, you know, the conversation about will he get away with it, or might there be, will the military go along with this aspect, or will the Supreme Court go along with that aspect? He's going to try to do it. He's telling us that. That's bad enough. Saying, well, he'll try to do it, but here's what will stop him, is not good enough. The fact that he will try is disgusting enough. And by the way, if you need a preview of what it'll be like, look at the Joe Biden impeachment inquiry, which we'll talk about now. It seemed as though the Joe Biden impeachment inquiry was dead. But now, with Mike Johnson as Speaker of the House, it's seeming like Republicans are trying to revive it. And Republicans have indeed now subpoenaed Hunter Biden, as well as James Biden, who is Joe Biden's brother. They are continuing to look for the evidence that for 40 years we just haven't been able to find of criminal wrongdoing by Joe Biden. The Associated Press reports House Republicans subpoena Hunter and James Biden as their impeachment inquiry ramps back up. They are taking their most aggressive step yet. It is a long-awaited move by Representative James Comer, who chairs the House Oversight Committee. They are bringing them in. So far, they have I love this one line. They have failed to uncover evidence directly implicating the president in any wrongdoing. Fox News covering this like it's the trial of the century. Listen to this.
All right, John, thank you. The House Oversight Committee is escalating its impeachment inquiry into President Biden, with Chairman James Comer issuing subpoenas to multiple members of the Biden family. Fox Digital reporter Brooke Singman is here live on set now. Brooke, good to see you. So who are these subpoenas for?
Hi, Sandra. Thanks for having me. So this just breaking, we have subpoenas for Hunter Biden.
Breaking.
James Biden, the president's brother, and Rob Walker, who is a business associate of Hunter and James. Also, House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer requested transcribed interviews from Hallie Biden, which is President Biden's daughter-in-law, who was married to Beau Biden. Mm-hmm. Hunter Biden was romantically involved with her for a time. Sarah Biden, who is James Biden's wife, and also Melissa Cohen, who is Hunter's current wife, Elizabeth Secundi, who is Hallie Biden's sister, and former business associate Tony Bobulinski. So these are all coming right now, breaking today, and House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer just issued these.
Fair to say this is the most aggressive step yet?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the first time we're having actual subpoenas for testimony for members of the Biden family, and James Comer said that these are just the first subpoenas that he's sending this.
It's only the beginning. I love, but also hate, how these reporters pretend, act like, maybe they believe it, that this is newsworthy for some reason other than the blatant and craven political nature of the actions that Republicans are taking. They don't have any evidence against Joe Biden. The latest thing that they're out there touting is a check for, I think it's $200,000, that Joe Biden had loaned to a relative and the relative was paying him back. And that's their smoking gun, and they call it circumstantial evidence. It's not even coherent with the broader story they're telling about Chinese bribery and Ukrainian corruption and who the hell knows what else. I am not of the mindset that they're actually going to impeach him. I think they're going to play like they are. I think they'll do the inquiry. They may keep the inquiry going a really long time and even say that Democrats are obstructing the inquiry. Right now, I don't think they're going to go and actually impeach him, because some of the saner Republicans know there's no actual evidence and that it could really backfire if they, 6 months before the 2024 election, impeach Biden over nothing. And it's clear that it's nothing. Sure, at a Trump rally, you'll find people who say, no, it's about corruption or it's about bribery. Most people will know it's about nothing. I think sane Republicans know that there's a huge political risk to doing that. Let me know what you think. Not the inquiry. Will Biden be impeached in the next year? Let me know what you think. We'll take a quick break and be back right after this. The David Pakman Show, of course, continues to be supported primarily by our viewers, people who watch a YouTube clip, people who listen to the podcast, whatever platform you may use to consume the show. Those are the folks that support the work that we do. You can sign up at joinpakman.com and get yourself a membership. It's cheap, it's quick, it's fantastic, and it goes a long way to supporting the work that we do. Let's hear from some people in the audience via Discord. You can join the Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. Let's start with Ayman from Washington. Ayman from Washington, you're on the air. What's on your mind today? And please unmute yourself so that we can hear you.
Hi, David. How can you hear me? How do I sound?
You sound great.
Awesome.
Did you have a question? All right. And there goes Ayman. Not good. Not good. Let's go to Adrian from Wyoming, who is currently undecided about who he will be voting for in 2024. Adrian from Wyoming, welcome to the show. What's going on?
Hello, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi. So I'm a progressive in Tennessee, and I'll for sure be supporting Gloria Johnson, but I'm a little undecided about I'm kind of fighting the lesser of two evils argument right now, especially with what's going on in Gaza. Mm-hmm. And I don't litigate. I want to ask a specific question about that, because I don't. Please. There's a million that could be posited. What is the best way to? Because when we had Trump in office, there are a lot of people that said that questioned like how you could deal with such fringe or incompetent leaders. But the reality right now on the ground in Israeli society is so many of the leaders are very far right wing. And mm-hmm. it's not necessarily our prerogative to influence Israeli democracy, but how can we build towards peace with people that are bent on annexing Gaza in the long term, or like continuing the settlements and not, as you've noted, commit towards establishing firm borders and working towards a solution in the long term? Like, I don't want to get into like all the other situations.
Let's explore this. So you're saying that this issue, the dynamics of Israeli politics, are making you question who to vote for president in the United States. Am I understanding that, Adrian?
Are you asking for, because I'm currently undecided for 2024. That's my honest position.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure if you're asking for, if you're just asking about questions for, American politics right now or questions in general.
No, what I'm trying to understand is you said based on what's going on in Gaza, you're not sure who you would support in 2024. Did I hear that correctly?
That's not my entire position. It's made me like a little bit more apprehensive, but I've been quite on the fence for a long time. I did support Joe Biden in 2020.
Okay, but so I guess what I'm trying to understand, Adrian, is let's see if we can approach this from a different angle. When you vote for president in the United States, what are the most important, say, five issues to you?
The most important in 2020 were the end of the pandemic. There was I appreciated Joe Biden's work on his priorities for student loans. I appreciated his work to fight for union jobs. And his work on climate change, but that's like kind of a mixed bag, although it's better.
Yeah. Let's see if we can approach it a different way.
Yeah.
Are you saying that one of the most important issues for you in 2024 will be the policy of Biden versus Trump with regard to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
It's been an issue that I've been involved in activism for a couple of years now. It is something that's front and center right now, like in my conscience right now, in the work that I'm trying to do with community organizations.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
Do you think that your view on that conflict is closer to Trump or Biden?
It's closer to neither right now because there's like, I almost think that if Trump were in office, at least Democrats pretend to care sometimes. But with the efforts to censor Rashida Tlaib, like it's putting into stark focus the disconnect that a lot of people have between this issue, like, and people that are bought for and paid for by like, not by the Israeli government, sometimes by AIPAC, but especially by like defense contractors and things like that. And the people that want to see a peaceful resolution, I don't want to dabble in hypotheticals because right now what's happening.
Well, forget about the hypotheticals for a second, Adrian.
Sure.
Biden's position has been, we're still going to support Israel and its right to defend itself, but we're also warning Israel not to go overboard. He wants a humanitarian pause. He warned Israel not to block aid to Gaza. Trump's position is blow the whole thing up. No aid for Gaza. Do nothing. Let him go to hell. Do you see any difference between those two positions?
Yes, I do.
I
see.
And which one are you closer to?
I don't think that Netanyahu's responding well to Biden because.
But hold on a second, Adrian. I'm getting a sense that you're kind of trying to make it almost like it. Neither one has exactly your position. So, but what I'm trying to figure out is, as a practical matter, it sounds like you're someone of the left. Is that right?
Yes.
You're someone of the left. As someone of the left, if you don't love Biden's position, are you saying you might vote Trump, whose position is even worse? Are you saying you might vote Trump, or is it you might just stay home?
No, I'm of the mind that I would leave the top ticket blank because there are, especially in the South, there are a lot of stronger progressive voices than I've seen when visiting and where I initially came from it in the South and in Wyoming. There are a lot of stronger progressive voices that mean more like that that embody more of your politics than there are in safe liberal
states. But would you vote for one of them? You just said you would leave it. You just said you would leave it blank. Would you leave it blank, or you would write in one of these other progressives?
Well, I might write in on the top of the ticket, but on the bottom,
you might.
With local leaders, like I know people that are tangibly connected to my communities and who stand for more.
No, I got you. I was asking on Trump Biden. All right, Adrian.
Right.
Well,
not,
thank you. Listen,
Trump,
it's you wouldn't vote Trump. All right. So fair enough. All right, Adrian. Thank you. Well, I hope you figure it out in time for the election. Adrian from Wyoming, who I guess votes in Tennessee. I think he said. All right. Let's go next to Dominic from Arizona. Dominic from Arizona, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hello, David. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello, David. It is really nice to speak to you. I've been watching you for some time now.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. So what I want to ask, so say Trump is found guilty in one of his indictments, but he gets elected. In your opinion, you don't know. There's no definitive answer.
Yeah.
Where do we go from there? Like, what?
I have no idea. I mean, there's people talking about Trump being president from prison. If I were a betting man, I would bet Trump's not going to be president from prison. Like, whatever is going to lead up to the resolution of this scenario, I don't think Trump will end up being president from prison. But I don't know. I mean, this is an unprecedented situation. I don't know what on earth this country is going to look like 2 years from now.
Right. And I mean, so where can I go with? I have friends that are I'm left. I've all my friends are left. Like, where do I go when they're mad at Biden and like they think Biden's this, Biden's that? But
yeah,
like, how can I explain to them? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, we need if you don't. I heard the last guy that you just talked to. Like, if you don't vote, then now we're stuck with something way worse. So like,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, listen,
like,
every election is. Imagine a number line, Dominic, okay? Imagine a number line.
Right.
And you can put every candidate on the number line. If Biden's a 10 and Trump's a 9, I'm voting for Biden because it's better. If Biden's a negative 4 and Trump's a negative 6, I'm voting for Biden because Biden's better. And, you know, sometimes people, when I say this, they go, oh, so if you had the choice between a KKK member or one of the Nation of Islam anti-Semites or something like that. Who do you? And I go, I don't know. I'd have to figure out where they are on the number line. And if it's going to be one of the two of them, I vote for the one that's least bad. Right. I mean, it's sort of like a risk mitigation thing. Yeah. I mean, every election is that there might be two candidates you really like and you have to figure out which one do I like more. Or two candidates you dislike and you have to figure out which one do I dislike less. And it's, you know, it's a sad thing that a lot of people don't get that.
Yeah, I know. It's so frustrating because like I'm like, so what are you going to do? Not vote? Or are you going to vote? Like, what's the end game? What are we doing? You know what I mean? Like,
I agree with you. What are we doing? That's the question.
Last thing, I'll let you go. One thing, I really, really appreciate your perspective. I've been watching you for some time. It's really cool to actually talk to you. I really appreciate it. How's the new book going though?
You know, I'm basically 98% done with the first draft. Now, I don't know how much in terms of revisions will have to happen, but I wrote every day for like 2 months and I got to like 98% done. It's in review. I'm meeting with my editor and we're going to keep on keeping on with it.
Nice. All right, David, like I said, appreciate your perspective, man. Always. I hope you have a good rest of your day.
All right. Thank you. There's Dominic from Arizona. Great to hear from you. Let's take some more calls. Why don't we go? You know, there's so many people who want to get on today. Let's go to Paul from Florida. Paul says he's undecided about the 2024 election. Paul, tell me, which candidates are you considering?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Okay. So actually, for me, what is very important is someone that is tough on China. I feel they are the biggest threat to the free world.
Okay.
And so Trump seems appealing to me in that regard.
In what way is Trump tough on China?
Well, when he was president, taxes and everything, trade war, as they say.
You liked the trade war?
It sounds silly, I know, but kind of, yeah. I think it's important to have someone in charge that is tough on our biggest rival.
In what sense do you think the trade war... Now, when you said taxes, I'm sure you meant tariffs, right, Paul?
Yeah, sorry, I misspoke, yes.
In what way did you like that? In what way was that helpful to the United States?
I think he was trying to make us less dependent on China because we are very dependent on them.
Right.
And
did it work?
Well, it was only for 4 years. He needed more time, I think.
But is there any metric or statistic you can point to that suggests Trump's tariff policy worked?
To be honest, no.
There isn't. So how do you know that it was a good thing?
Yeah, that's a fair point. I can't say that, actually.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's very interesting, Paul. Yeah. Anything else you had?
Actually, while we're talking about China, I was wondering, do you think they have like interest in upcoming election? Do they have any like preferences for a candidate?
I would not be the right person to weigh. It would be irresponsible for me to give an opinion on the upcoming Chinese election. It's very far outside my area of expertise, Paul.
No. I meant, do they have an interest in interfering with USA election?
Oh, does China have an interest in interfering with the American election?
Yeah.
Oh, probably in the sense that many countries do. The extent to which they would be able to interfere, I think, depends on who you ask. I do not think that China is going to play a material role in the 2024 presidential election. That's my expectation.
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you for taking my call.
All right, Paul from Florida. Yeah, rethink the tariff stuff. Because like when you can't come up with a reason why it was good, maybe it wasn't so good, you know? All right, let's take a very quick break. Then we're going right back to the Discord lines. Stand by. Let's hear from a few more people. We do this via Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord. We're going to go next to Amir from Israel. Amir from Israel, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today? Israel/Rhode Island, I guess.
Yes. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Fantastic. So, yeah, I'm Israeli. I currently live in Rhode Island,
sure,
temporarily. So I would actually put a B there if I was American, but I'm not American, so I cannot vote. If I was American, I would probably support Biden. But anyway, I was actually calling to ask about something else.
Please.
So you may have heard about this campaign that some Jews and Israelis in the United States are doing recently, that they are hanging posters of kidnapped Israelis kidnapped by Hamas.
I've seen it.
So there's an issue with that. So apparently some Americans are tearing these posters down.
Yes.
I heard it happened in Providence, where I'm living right now, and in Boston and in New York and probably in some other places. Now, the really strange thing about this, and I would like to hear your opinion about this, when they tear them down, they don't really explain it in any way, because I'm Israeli and I'm really used to hearing all kinds of opinions that are critical of Israel. Yeah. I agree with some of them. I disagree with some of them. But these people who tear down the posters, they just don't explain anything at all. They just, well, you can easily find lots of videos of people just tearing them down and just being silent and not saying anything, or just saying something very generic like, these posters are not supposed to be there. Or
right.
Something like that. Well, like I saw some video that says, how do you even know that this is true, that they are kidnapped? Like the explanations are really just nothing.
Yeah, it's a couple different things. Amir, I think it's
another level.
There's different reasons why different people do it. Some are ripping the posters down because they believe that the posters are inherently anti-Palestinian. They believe that saying, hey, here's people kidnapped by Hamas, we want them back. There are people who interpret that as anti-Palestinian, so they rip them down. There are people who rip them down because they're just anti-Semites, right? Like some of the people ripping down the posters are simply anti-Semites. Some people believe that the posters of the missing Israeli hostages, rather than posters of, you know, Gazan civilians that died, shows an unfair concern for one group, but not the other. I mean, you really have to ask the people. And I think some of them don't even know why they're doing it. Honestly, I think some have no idea why they're doing it.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling that I get also. It's like this. I could easily explain this by just anti-Semitism, but I don't want to be... You know,
no, and I don't think that's the only reason.
I don't want to jump to this conclusion so quickly.
Right, right.
But
I agree
with
you. Sorry, what was that, Amir?
Yeah, I'm not hearing any better explanation than just anti-Semitism or just, I mean, they say nothing. So if they say nothing, I don't even know what to assume. It's just,
yeah, I mean, I would want to hear from some of them. I want to hear from them why they're ripping the posters down, and then we'll see what the reasons are.
Okay. Yeah. That's really what I wanted to ask about. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. There is Amir from Israel/Rhode Island. Let's see. Why don't we go next to David from, I think it's Long Island. David from Long Island, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today? And you've got to unmute yourself, sir, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you for taking my call. I was going to ask about something else, but the first caller from Tennessee really got me thinking about something else. And I just wanted to ask that question. I am
sure.
Genuinely shocked when I hear so many liberal Americans like put so much political stock in Israel. I understand why a lot of right wing Trump supporting Jews that I know are no longer going to support Trump in the next election.
Right.
They've already given up on him, and many of them are just going to not vote or vote for Nikki Haley or someone else if she gets the nomination, or who knows. But what I hear people from the left, especially a guy from Tennessee, probably doesn't even know a lot of Jews. There's a very small Jewish population in Tennessee.
Yep.
Speak about these issues in that way, as a Jew from Long Island, it makes my blood boil, because I don't understand why they care so much about this issue when there's people suffering in Yemen, there's people suffering in Myanmar, there's people suffering in Western China, people suffering all over the world. Suffering is not a uniquely Gazan phenomenon. There's people suffering in this country. There's people suffering in Tennessee. And
in other words, you're saying that, like, for example, if someone said, I'm going to base my vote for president based on their policies on what's happening in Myanmar rather than domestic economic policy, education policy, access to healthcare, whatever, we would go, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, you're voting for the American president. You live in the U.S. Why? Well, are you from Myanmar? Maybe. I don't know. And so you're saying, like, it's kind of equally weird to say I'm going to choose between Trump and Biden based on their policy on the Israeli-Hamas conflict rather than on domestic issues. I think that's a fair criticism. I think a lot of people would say the U.S. plays such an outsized role in the conflict of Israel and Palestine because of funding and alliances and relationships that it almost is like a domestic issue. I think that's what some of them would say.
I understand that. I actually thank you for saying it that way. That was really well said. And I couldn't have said that well myself. But my counterpoint to that would simply be, then I understand if it's one of your many concerns, right?
Yeah.
If it's one of a list of concerns, but if that's your primary voting issue or an issue that you might flip your vote on,
right,
it truly seems to me to be signifying the level of inherent, maybe anti-Semitism on the left that doesn't get spoken about because it's subversive and it's not in the open in the same way that
I don't know about that. I mean, listen, I will agree with you is if someone comes to me and they say, you know, Biden's clearly better on healthcare, Biden's better on abortion, Biden's better on infrastructure, Biden's better on LGBT rights, but I don't like what he said about the Israeli-Gaza conflict, so I am going to stay home and potentially help Trump become president. To me, that does seem crazy. I mean, obviously, they're not saying I'm going to vote Trump. Oh, and we lost the caller. All right. Well, I don't know what happened. They're not saying I'm going to vote Trump, which would be outwardly crazy. Listen, it's a tough thing. And here's the thing. Everybody's allowed to use whatever metric they want to determine who they'll vote or if they will vote. And that I, greatly respect. All right. Let's go to Donna from Donna from where? Is it Donna from New England? I see N-E. Donna from New York. Welcome, Donna. It says you are undecided about 2024. What's on your mind today?
I am. I have some similar sentiments to the last caller. I found the far left response to October 7th to be kind of alarming. Mm. And I guess I just saw a lot of pro-Hamas sentiment, both in the protests and online.
Okay.
And I want to know what you think are the factors in leading to a bunch of this like pro-Hamas sentiment, the extremism that I'm seeing. What do you think happened that so many people are sort of sympathizing with Hamas? Although I know the horrific stuff that happens in Gaza, I know that. Yep. I don't think that that's enough necessarily to, like, for people to sympathize with Hamas. So yeah. I wanted to get your opinion on what the factors are. And that is why I'm undecided.
I think whatever I tell you are the factors that have led to the status quo, people are going to disagree with me and be mad. Let me give you an example. If I say, you know, I think one of the things, like if I were to say something like, most of the people are not pro-Hamas, they're just really concerned about Palestinian rights. But there are some people who clearly are for Hamas. And the reason why is they believe that there is no other way for Gazans to resist evil Israel. Or they believe that what happened on October 7th is merely the logical response to 75 years of Israeli aggression. Or, you know, I think they would say something along those lines. People will be mad because they'll say, well, I'm not taking that perspective seriously enough or something like that. I'm going to give you just one vignette. OK, and it's a lot of these people truly don't know what's going on. That they don't have facts. They don't have facts. And the example I have is the other day I was out to lunch in the not super far from Times Square, and a sort of like pro-Palestinian rally kind of came by, and it's all fine. It wasn't a big one. It was just on the sidewalk and whatever. And as I'm leaving with a friend of mine, I have no interest in engaging on the street in politics in this way. I get plenty of it on my show, but my friend asked a woman who was going down carrying a sign that said, you know, from the river to the sea. He said, what does that mean? What does from the river to the sea mean? And she said, it means Palestinian freedom. And he said, oh, OK, which river? She didn't know. Which sea?
Right.
She didn't know. He said, what happens to Israel if Palestine is from the river to the sea? She said, I don't know. They have to go somewhere else, I guess. Like, you know, she never really thought about it. You know, it's just people. I don't know. I mean, I guess they just go somewhere else. It's not really clear to me. Now, there are tons of people that are far more informed than that. But I think a lot of people in general in politics, like the caller who called in about the tariffs in China. And then he's like, actually, I have no clue if those tariffs were good. I don't really know. This pervades our politics. This is everywhere. This is in every issue. And I think one of the things that we are observing is, we frequently see extremely confident opinions about stuff, not informed by much.
Right.
Now, let me ask you, Donna, you say you're undecided. Which candidates are you considering?
And to be clear, I would consider myself a progressive. I've only voted for liberal candidates in the past.
Yeah.
But based off of the reaction to October 7th, and I guess my estimates of like how much of the Liberal Party I think is genuinely pro-Hamas, which I think it's a small minority.
Very but small. It's
hardly too much. And in fact, like the response from politicians alarmed me also. I didn't think that it was harsh enough on people who were condoning violence. And so I would consider voting for Nikki Haley or something. I know I wouldn't vote for Trump, but this like really did. It was jarring for me, and it changed my mind a little bit about the next election.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I would say to you is go by what you're voting for. And that has to be what Joe Biden has said and is offering. And I think that what Joe Biden has said and is offering on this issue bears no resemblance to this pro-Hamas slice that you're referring to. So that's what I would encourage you to think
about. Even his press secretary has you know, any question when asked about anti-Semitism has dodged it. When she was asked about the posters of people taking down posters, she sort of said, "I'm not interested in talking about it," and then redacted kind of on Twitter. And so I don't know, I'm paying attention to those things. I find that troubling. I don't know why it's so difficult to say it's not appropriate to do that.
Yeah. I didn't see what you're referring to, but I'm going to check it out. Listen, Donna, thank you. I appreciate you for sharing your perspective.
Thanks, David.
All right. There goes Donna from New York. Let's speak to Sam from Minnesota. Sam from Minnesota, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I had a question. I know you're aware of the infamous PragerU, which isn't actually a university, but in the last few months, a lot of the ads I've been seeing have actually been for something called Hillside College, which, as far as I can tell, is an actual college, although they don't participate in Title IX.
Okay.
So they put up, you know, videos produced by an actual college, styled as courses, but not worth college credit. And do you know anything about that?
Have never heard of it. But is this connected to PragerU?
No. It's just kind of the same sort of thing, but totally independent. Not at all connected as far as I know. And just for context, it seems one of the videos stars Art Laffer of Laffer Curve fame.
Oh, interesting.
So that's kind of the level.
It's Hillside College?
Hillsdale.
Hillsdale. Okay. Private conservative liberal arts college in Michigan, founded by men and women grateful to God. Oh, boy. Strong emphasis on a classic education. Refusal to accept any federal or state subsidies. Interesting.
I don't know who was doing it. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't know much about it, but it sounds a little wacky.
Yeah, it's almost like somebody saw PragerU and they're like, hey, why don't we do that for real?
Right. That's interesting. I'll look into it more. Do you know anyone who goes there?
No, not at all. I just know I've seen a lot of YouTube ads that, you know, it's all over YouTube.
Got it. I will look into it, but sounds pretty wild.
Do you know anything about the Minnesota flag update as well?
No. What's going on with it?
So just recently the legislature put together a commission and they took suggestions for what the new flag is going to be, and they're deciding on what it's going to be. So we're going to get a new state flag.
And what's the design? What's the gist of it?
Well, the old one is kind of, you know, the state seal on a blue background, which is like half the state flags. The new one, as far as I know, they haven't decided. They have a lot of potential candidates. I think probably the favorite one is called the North Star flag.
Yeah, I'm seeing that here.
Yeah.
I mean, these are some slick looking flags. A lot of these state flags all look very similar and they look extremely dated. I'm for modernizing state flags. How's that for a controversial position, Sam?
Yeah. I think you get a lot of fights in that one.
Yeah, a lot of people that want to keep the old one. All right. All right. Otherwise, things are good. Things are cold up there or what?
It's winter. It hasn't snowed a lot yet, but it's probably gonna.
Good. All right, Sam. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. There goes Sam from Minnesota. And that will do it for today. We will take calls again if I have anything to say about it. Thank you to everybody who called in. Speak to you very soon. We'll take a break and be back with so much more. Let's do some feedback from the audience. All right. It is Friday. It's time for feedback. We call it Friday Feedback. You can email info@davidpakman.com. You might be featured if you leave a YouTube comment or post something to the subreddit. It's anyone's guess how you might end up in this segment. We start with something. I could spend an hour just doing this sort of thing. I'm not going to do it. But just to give you a sense, I try to have categories of things that I receive. Here is one category that I get a lot, especially lately. Musa wrote in and said, F you, Zionist foods bag. Now, I don't know what foods bag means. I don't know if that's some kind of insult that I'm not familiar with or if it's a typo. But Musa says, F you, and spells out the whole word, which we can't say for FCC reasons. F you, Zionist foods bag. So presented with no further comment, I get a bunch of those every single day. Kared wrote in response to our coverage of Candace Owens's interview with Bill Maher. Kared says, no one has been to the moon, period. This is a great example of people with extreme confidence, unwavering confidence, almost explosive confidence in something for which they have no ability to defend. We have all of this great evidence of having been to the moon, including the observations of independent space agencies in other countries who would be very incentivized to say, hey, you know what? The U.S. lied. No, they have the observational data. We have the moon rocks. We have all of the astronauts who have gone and come back and told the story. And it almost would be more difficult to stage the entire thing. Like, that's actually the point where we're at on this moon landing thing. And yet people continue to say it. It's very, very strange. Shirley wrote in and says, wow, mansplainer of the year. Only people interested in politics would look at these videos. Therefore, I found it astounding that you think that you're explaining the obvious was necessary. But it's the wrong "you're," by the way. So listen, sometimes people criticize me and they go, David, you know, when you explain the difference between debt and deficit, when you talk about that issue, you really don't need to do it. Like, everybody understands that. I can assure you, not everybody understands that. You should see the emails that I get. When people write in and they say, David, I can't stand that you said that the debt has decreased under such president. I never said that. I might have been talking about the deficit, or I might have been talking about the rate of increase of the deficit, but I never said that the debt decreased. Anyway, I hate to tell you, Shirley, I do have to explain all these things. I do have to explain all these things in order to cut down a little bit on the completely outrageous, uninformed emails that I get. It's a sad reality. Chris wrote in and said, you're an idiot. Please invite me sometime. At least he's politely saying to invite him. So let me state this once again. I don't know where these right wingers get this impression, but they are welcome to call into the show. I would love for them to call into the show. We want more ideological balance, especially when I take live calls. It happens that because this is a left-wing show, we have a lot more left-wing callers. That's just the reality of what it is. But we want to hear from right-wingers. And so Chris is welcome to call in when we take calls. We do it via Discord. I want to hear from you. I would love it. When we've had folks like this get on the air, which has happened a handful, you know, 5, 10 times, something like that, 15 times. It's great. It's great in so many different ways. So, Chris, you're officially invited. Please call in next time that we take live calls. I think it would be a really, really great thing. Okay. Aggressive Attitude says, isn't it funny how certain people question Michael Cohen's, quote, criminal past while completely ignoring or conveniently forgetting who Cohen committed these crimes for? Yeah, you know, this came up on the Tuesday show, on Super Tuesday. On Tuesday, when Alina Habba, Trump's lawyer, after Trump's testimony, issued that ridiculous statement where she said their superstar witness admits that he lied. Well, yeah, the lying is what he went to prison for, right? So Michael Cohen says, I did lie. And it was at the direction of Trump, in order to do what Trump wanted me to do as part of a criminal conspiracy directed by Donald Trump. When we talk about RICO and when we talk about conspiracy and these sorts of crimes, what we're talking about is crimes committed in service to some kind of criminal enterprise. They seem to think it's a gotcha of some kind. What I would say to them and people like the ones that Aggressive Attitude is referring to that say, you can't listen to Cohen. The case can't depend on Cohen. Number one, it doesn't. There's like 100 witnesses in that case. So it doesn't depend on Michael Cohen. And number two, Michael Cohen has admitted to where he was dishonest and has otherwise not been caught lying even once. I'm not aware of a single time. And this is not because he's a friend of the show. And if he had been caught, I would ask him about it when he comes on the show. I would say, hey, look, even though you say you lied for Trump and you haven't lied since, here's where you lied since. I haven't been able to find a single instance of that. So I think those who want to make that argument have to find some instances of Michael Cohen lying in the context of since he's done his mea culpa. And I haven't been able to find that. Donna wrote in about the border And Donna says, David, why don't you ever talk about our border crisis? You never comment on this. What are your thoughts? Why would Joe Biden allow this? Well, it's not that I never talk about it. It's that we've talked about it so much and done a deep dive about immigration that there's very little new to say. Now, I know that there are some, I guess, like Donna, who believes that something new, something special, something different is happening right now under Joe Biden. The reality is that border policy has not dramatically changed under Biden since Trump. I know that Trump and others want you to believe that by January 25th of 2021, Biden had changed border policy so much that people were just flowing in. There is a reality that there's a seasonality to undocumented immigration. There's a reality that during COVID, movement was heavily restricted. And so there was pent up demand once COVID restrictions started to ease. And Joe Biden was president during part of that. Trump was president during part of it. It is true that the Biden administration has done a lot to try to reunite families that have been separated at the border. There are still families that are separated and that have not yet been reunited. But Joe Biden has tried to deal with that. But there's not that much to say. I mean, as I've said before, we need some kind of permanent status for DACA recipients, those who were legally minors when they came to the United States undocumented with their parents. It wasn't their fault. We need to do something. We need to do something to grant them permanent status. I am completely open to rethinking how immigration is done. If someone wants to put forward a proposal, I'm not opposed to that. When it comes to visa overstays, if we decide as a country, we seriously want to deal with so-called illegal immigration, we've got to put dramatically more focus on visa overstays. It is also the case that all immigrants, both legal and undocumented to the United States, are less likely to commit crimes than are natural born American citizens. That's been widely documented. None of these things have changed, Donna. And so to the extent that I'm not talking about it, it's because there's very little new to say. And until our lawmakers actually are ready to, at a minimum, do something permanent on DACA, there isn't that much new thing to talk about. I guess what you want me to do is to do some kind of unhinged attack on what Joe Biden has done by opening the border. It's just that's not going on. So I'm not going to do that. A user, Minimalism for Thee, asked on our subreddit, will David speak about the election in Argentina? David was born in Argentina. So not only is he allowed to vote in the election, I think he's required by law to vote. I'm not. I've been out of the country with all my, all of my documents have been expired for a long time and I've been out of the country long enough. I was never of voting age when I lived in Argentina. I am not required to vote. Goes on and says Argentina is one of the few countries that doesn't let you renounce citizenship so David can vote through his embassy, blah, blah, blah. Very curious who David would support. Most people dislike all the candidates except the Milei supporters. So here's what's going on in Argentina. In the original election, the first election in October, nobody got to 50%. So there's going to be a runoff upcoming. The candidates that will be in the runoff are this bonkers Trumpian libertarian with bizarre hair named Javier Milei. He's like right wing, hard right. And then Sergio Massa, which is someone on the Cristina left wing, sort of like corrupt line. I don't like either of them. I don't like either of them. If I were to vote in Argentina, I almost certainly would have voted for Patricia Bullrich. She is well to my right. OK, she's probably like a Romney sort of Republican. But given all of the options, the insanity of hard right Milei and the absurdity of saying, let's put the Cristina type people in power again, given how disastrous they've been, I don't know that I would have really had much of a place. And so I probably would have gone with Bullrich. Doesn't matter because she came in third, has pledged support now to Milei. It's all a mess. If I were to vote, because voting is required in Argentina, if I were to vote in the runoff, I would probably submit a blank ballot. You're required to vote, but you can vote blank. And that's probably what I would do because both Milei and Massa are likely to be disasters for the country. So that's where I'm at right now on the situation. And then lastly, Underwater Phil weighs in on the caller who said people are taking down Trump flags. Underwater Phil says he can confirm it. He can confirm it. He said he basically said, I've noticed less. It should be fewer Trump flags on trucks. I can 100% confirm this. Over the last 5 to 6 years across the Southwest United States, every RV park we visited would have dozens of pro-Trump flags as well as shirts, hats, etc. It's just been a part of RV parks. Everyone's pretty cool, so it's just an observation. However, in the last 2 months, my wife and I have absolutely noticed a decline in the Trump swag around the parks. And just last night before seeing this clip, we were talking about not seeing a single Trump flag over a 4-day RV trip we just got back from. Seems they are less eager to show it now. I hope the fever is breaking. You know, I can't tell you for sure whether Trump flags at RV parks are a leading indicator of declining support in Trump. Trump still has about 60% support among the Republican primary electorate. I hope that it is the case that declining Trump flags on pickup trucks and RVs is a sign that the fever is breaking. We can only wait and see. info@davidpakman.com if you have something to say. We will see you on the bonus show. Remember, you can sign up and get instant access to the bonus
show. A David Pakman membership costs $6 a month.
Six or only three if you use the coupon code FFOX. Sign up at joinpakman.com. I really hope to see you on the bonus show. Donald Trump is suddenly scaring many people. He said on the Clay and Buck show, I know, that he will consider potentially Tucker Carlson for his vice presidential running mate. That's not even necessarily the craziest thing Trump said during the interview. Take a listen to this.
Would you consider Tucker Carlson on your VP list?
Oh, wow.
I want to give you a hypothetical here. You're a big sports fan. You know, like, Nick Saban's going to retire at some point. And right. If you talk to the athletic director at Alabama, he would say he has a list. So would Tucker Carlson be on your list of potential VPs? And how many names might be on that list as you sit and look and survey the political field?
Well, first of all, you know, I did my first, you could call it counter-programming, but I won't call it that. But Tucker wanted to do an interview during the first debate. And I think you know, because this is what your business is, we broke every record.
Monster audience.
In history. Yeah. I think it just hit over 300 million people.
Now, remember, that is obviously untrue. And we've talked about how Twitter has juiced their system of tracking to make it so Trump can say that. But of course, it's not true that 300 million people watched his debate with Tucker Carlson. It's patently absurd.
But it was for that evening over 207 million. It then got to 275 within a day or two. And the biggest ever was Oprah's interview with Michael Jackson, which was 125 million.
Right.
So we almost doubled it. Now, who would have thought that was going to happen? The debate, the last debate they had, had the lowest audience in the history of presidential debates.
That's true.
I don't know if you know it. And I think the one tonight is not, it's on tonight, and
yeah.
I don't even talk about it.
Would you consider Tucker, though, that they based on the
I numbers? Like Tucker a lot. I guess I would. I think I'd say I would, because he's got great common sense. You know, when they say that you guys are conservative or I'm conservative, it's not that we're conservative. We have common sense. We want to have safe borders. We want to have a wall because walls work. You know what, Ron, I used to say about walls? I'd say wheels and walls. Everything changes.
All right. So then Trump goes off and ranting into other things. But he says he would consider Tucker Carlson. Now, what's fascinating about this is that Tucker Carlson was revealed to have said horrible things about Donald Trump. He referred to Trump as a demonic force. He said he despised him passionately. And now I guess everyone pretends like that didn't happen. And Tucker's interviewing Trump and they're doing the whole dog and pony show of normalization and everything else that we saw. It's very strange, but also it's extraordinarily horrifying that Trump says, yeah, I would consider Tucker Carlson for VP. Now, Trump was also asked about his indictments. And it's actually sort of interesting what he says. Let me play this for you.
I was always of the opinion that a thing like this couldn't happen. In other words, you protect your former presidents. It's, you know, it's terrible thing to go after a former president, other than if you're in a banana republic.
And a possible a future thing. President as well.
And which a possible, to, yeah, it's possible.
Do you think they would put you in jail, and do you think that would benefit you?
I don't know. I don't want to say. Yeah, I don't want to say about benefit because I don't want to predict that. But would they, if they could? I think they would do it. Yeah, I think it's not beyond them. I think these are very deranged and angry people.
So Trump says you're supposed to protect your former presidents. You're supposed to protect the former presidents, not go after them. Trump is saying he should be immune from consequences if he does illegal things. That's what he's saying. He's not arguing the facts. He's simply saying, I thought you protected your former presidents. He wants carte blanche. He wants license to commit crimes, to shoot the proverbial or real person on Fifth Avenue, as he has said before, and to have no consequences. The entire point of establishing and upholding a rule of law is to apply it to everyone.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The situation in Shifa Hospital now are very critical. Nothing happened like this before. There is direct targeting of the hospital buildings. So our colleagues there, they barely communicate with the outside community.
Gaza's two largest hospitals are no longer functioning. As hospitals as they run out of fuel and are surrounded by Israeli forces. Doctors at Al-Shifa Hospital are desperately trying to keep alive over 30 premature babies after six babies die due to the power outage. We'll speak to a pediatric intensive care physician who works with the humanitarian aid organization Médecins Sans Frontières, that's Doctors Without Borders. Then we remember the Palestinian doctor Hamam Alow, who was killed Saturday when an Israeli artillery shell struck his wife's home, killing him, his father, his brother-in-law, and his father-in-law. The doctor spoke to Democracy Now 2 weeks ago about why he continued to risk his life to help patients in Gaza.
Do you think I went to medical school and for my postgraduate degrees for a total of 14 years, so I think only about my life? And not my patients.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Gaza's two largest hospitals, Al-Shifa and Al-Quds, have closed as Gaza's health system collapses under relentless Israeli bombardment and blockades. At least six premature babies and nine other patients have died at Al-Shifa due to the shortages of electricity. Photos show premature babies removed from their incubators, placed together on a bed for warmth as the last remaining hospital workers are forced to resort to desperate measures. Medical staff say Israeli forces have entered hospitals and fired at patients and forced hundreds of others onto the streets. Doctors and officials with the Palestinian Ministry of Health pleaded with international actors to allow for the safe evacuation and treatment of patients. Dr. Mohammed Kandil directs the emergency department at Al-Shifa.
Hospital under fire. The last example is Shifa Hospital ICU. There is another private obstetric hospital was targeted directly today. And two of our colleagues who are specialists in obstetric and gynecology were killed tonight. There is no service for pediatric patients in the northern area. Five kids in the pediatric ICU left alone in Rantisi Hospital, and we don't know what's going on with them. The communication were lost, so they might be dead or alive. So now in Shifa Hospital, they cannot deal with the dead bodies. There is a tenth of dead bodies back in the hospital.
Nearly 200 medical workers have been reported killed since October 7th. Among the dead is Al-Shifa's Dr. Hamam Alo, whose family home was shelled by Israel. We spoke to Dr. Alo less than 2 weeks ago. Later in the broadcast, we'll play that whole interview. In Geneva, UN staff observed a minute of silence today in memory of the 101 employees of the UN's Palestinian Refugee Agency, known as UNRWA, who've been killed in Israel's assault on Gaza. Palestinian health officials say it's impossible to determine an updated death toll due to communications outages, but said on Sunday at least 11,100 people have been killed since the start of the conflict, including 8,000.